Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
It is the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Every Wednesday at this exact time, we have one of the most respected NFL analysts around weekly with us on Midday 180. You can catch him on NFL Matchup tonight at 10 and 10:30 on ESPN2. He'll appreciate that I didn't put him on the spot for the timing this week. I looked it up last night, Chad. Set my DVR for tonight, ESPN2, NFL Matchup with Greg Cosell, Sal Powell, Lewis Riddick, 10 and 10:30, back-to-back shows.
I'll be doing the exact same, setting my DVR for that program.
It's a big show today with the NFL Draft coming up this week, and we say hello to Greg Cosell. Greg, what's up?
Jonathan, what's happening, my man?
I like the pink tie choice on Matchup.
Well, you know, that's my daughter picks out that kind of stuff. I don't make those decisions. That's
well done.
Way beyond my my simple mind. As Clint Eastwood once said in a movie, a man has to know his limitations.
Well done, Greg. Hey, we have spent a ton of time on quarterbacks throughout our visits with you over the last 3 to 4 months. And if our listeners haven't heard your take on the top signal callers, by all means, we invite them to go check out the podcast online, midday180.com. But let's look a bit deeper in this first round for what we may see tomorrow night. Let's assume the Giants are not going quarterback at number two for a moment, and let's take a look at the group of players that they're likely selecting from with that pick. So, Greg, through the lens of the Giants, Saquon Barkley, here's a talented back who ran inside zone. I think every snap was from shotgun at Penn State.
The last 2 years, for sure.
He was excellent with that stop-and-start ability, dynamic in the passing game as well. Now put him with the Giants offense. Does that make a ton of sense for the direction they might go?
Well, he would be much more of an eye back to some degree, although the Giants could well be in the gun. I think, ideally, that he can be a perfectly good eye back. I made a point in my notes that I'd love to see him in that role, because I think in the NFL, for the most part, at some point you will have to do that. Now you get into the argument, which has been just going back and forth on Twitter, as you probably know, about the value of the running back position. I think that most people think that if a player is an offensive game changer, regardless of position, that he's a valuable piece. Barkley, ideally, is a player that can score touchdowns. And I think offensively, those are players you want. Now, I understand both sides of the equation, but I think he'd be viewed as a game changer. So I think they could easily take him, particularly for their team, because they have a quarterback now in Eli Manning who needs an offense that's multidimensional and who needs a run game. Everything becomes team-based when you get right down to it. It's when the Cowboys took Ezekiel Elliott at 4, they were a team that played a ton of zone coverage, and they made a choice with Elliott over Jalen Ramsey. And obviously it worked.
Do you like how Barkley finishes runs?
That's not his strength. He's not a hammer. He's an odd kind of runner given his body type and the fact that he's very strong in terms of just sheer weightlifting strength. But he's a run-to-daylight runner more than a power runner. He's stronger in his body more than he is powerful as a runner. So he's not really a hammer in that sense. Is he capable of it? My guess is he would be. That's something that could be in a guy's DNA. Like Leonard Fournette, that's in his DNA. He attacks people. Barkley does not run like that. He runs to space. He runs to open area, and he certainly has enough speed to outrun angles.
With his lower body strength, who does he remind you of?
Well, that's a hard question because he doesn't run as a lower body strength guy. I would say that there are runs where he looks like Barry Sanders, where he has that stop and start quickness and that sort of ability to change direction. There are times, and this might seem like an odd comparison, but there are times his running style reminded me of Darren Sproles. Sproles is just a much smaller man, obviously, in terms of height. But he's not a power runner in a strict sense.
Greg Cosell with us here on the Midday 180. So if they go Barkley at number two, the comparisons, they're already there, but they'll definitely be there to the other top running backs that have been drafted very high. What does Barkley compare to recent drafts? You mentioned Fournette and Elliott.
Well, keep in mind, you know, there's a lot of people who believe you don't take a running back in the top 10 or even in the first round. But think about this. In 2015, Todd Gurley went 10 to the Rams. I think he's a pretty important piece of what they do. In 2016, Elliott went 4 to the Cowboys. We know what he did. In 2017, Fournette went 4 to the Jaguars. We know what he did. So it's easy to make abstract platitudinous points about the value of running backs, and I'm not saying those points don't have merit, but I think there's arguments on both sides. So, you know, Barkley would go to the Giants, and he'd be a foundation of what they do. Ideally, you're giving him the ball 20 times a game. You're lining him up to detach from the formation as a pass receiver, and you're using him as a multidimensional. You're using him as kind of a supercharged Alvin Kamara, because Kamara is not going to get the ball 20 times a game running it with the Saints.
This will tell you a lot about Gettleman, right? But when he has the running back or the defensive end on the board in this scenario, if he went running back over the pass rusher.
Yeah. That would say a lot about him. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, and I know Dave, but I don't know him well enough to ask him who he's going to take, nor would I ask anybody who they're going to take. But Bradley Chubb would make a lot of sense for the Giants, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did that, because I know that Dave Gettleman has talked publicly, certainly, about his belief in line play and the importance of being strong on both lines, the offensive line and the defensive line.
Bradley Chubb, you mentioned him, the other player everyone has the Giants pondering today. He began his college career at linebacker.
That's
and then
correct.
Moved up to the Wolfpack defensive line. Describe his skill set and how he sets up offensive tackles. And as you've watched a ton of film on him, do you see a complete defensive end?
I do. The player, he's an interesting player. I watched, I think, 7 or 8 games of Bradley Chubb. And I kept watching him because initially you don't watch him and say, wow, is that guy explosive? But the more you watch him, there's a subtle and deceptive explosiveness to the way he plays. He ran the arc as a pass rusher. He was able to clear the edge of tackles with burst and acceleration. If you look at his feet, he was able to get his inside foot turned to the quarterback. And that's a really important thing if people can picture that, because that's how you then can flatten and close to the quarterback instead of being pushed past the quarterback. He's an absolute technician with his hands, and they're strong and they're violent. And he played with high energy. He played with a competitive personality, snap after snap. The player he started to remind me of, Jonathan, the more I watched him, was Khalil Mack.
And you brought up his hands. You know, I think a lot of people would look at a defensive end and just say, okay, does he get to the quarterback or not? But as he pass rushes, is he among the best at the punch and stab against linemen?
Yeah, he had a number of moves with his hands. They were strong. He used his inside arm effectively to stab and move offensive tackle, which is really important to be able to do that, because that's when you get them off balance. And then if the offensive tackle picks one foot up off the ground, then you can just push them. Then you and I could push them because they're on one foot. But that's an art form. And he featured the dip and rip move to clear the edge. He featured the arm over move, the swim move. So he has multiple hand usage, and that's really, really important, because so much of rushing the quarterback and really playing defensive line or offensive line is about technique and using your hands. You know, it's one reason why when we talk about Quentin Nelson or Vita Vea, you know, yes, they're strong guys, but they're not going to lift up linemen in the NFL. That's not going to happen. You know, so it becomes a matter of hand usage.
Greg Cosell with us weekly here on the Midday 180. And Chad, we've mentioned Barkley, we've mentioned Chubb, and the outside pick for the Giants would be a player he just mentioned in Quentin Nelson.
Yeah, and you mentioned the hand usage of Quentin Nelson, and we've heard a lot of superlatives of his leading up to the draft. just how good is he as a guard prospect? And can you find a comp in the NFL right now to Quentin Nelson?
He's a great guard prospect. I mean, I would say that I've been evaluating college players, I don't know, 10, 12 years. And I'd say, you forget over the years, but I'd say he's probably as good a guard prospect as I evaluated, particularly as a run blocker. He's a really, really good run blocker. I learned my lesson over the years that for interior offensive linemen, it's not about looking pretty. It's about competitive attitude. It's about technique. They don't have to be dancing bears. He's a powerful man. He's got a nasty competitive attitude. He plays a strong man's game, but he does have good movement. Normally, when you play that grown man's game inside and you're highly competitive with an edge, that translates well to the interior of the O-line in the NFL. Now, like I said a moment ago, he's not going to lift up defensive tackles in the NFL. You know, there are plays in college where he literally torqued guys. That won't happen in the NFL, but he's still a very strong player.
For teams drafting in the top 10 that are looking for difference makers on defense, when you look at Roquan Smith from Georgia, is he just a really good player, or is he a difference maker for an NFL defense?
Well, let me ask you a question. Is Bobby Wagner a difference maker, do you think?
I would say yes.
Because then it comes down to what defense you're playing.
Right.
You know, he's certainly not Luke Kuechly, okay? But wouldn't you argue Luke Kuechly's a difference maker?
Absolutely.
No, he's not quite Luke Kuechly. But I think, depending on the defense that you play, that an inside linebacker in today's NFL who can play all three downs, the way teams attack the middle of the field with the tight end and now backs in the passing game, that an inside linebacker who can play all three downs with his kind of speed, range, and athleticism is a valuable piece of a defense. So difference maker is one of those relative terms, Chad. Everybody might describe that differently. We've been trained over the years to believe that the difference makers in the NFL are quarterback, left tackle, pass rusher, and corner. Now, the game has changed, and I think you have to think a little bit about how the game has changed to sort of answer that question, and there might be defensive coaches who answer it differently.
What do you think about the possibility of Roquan Smith in San Francisco's defense?
Well, they play, their methodology starts with that Seattle concept because it's Robert Saleh who spent about 4 or 5 years in Seattle. So I mentioned Bobby Wagner to you, and given that Reuben Foster may not be there, Roquan Smith, it theoretically for them, becomes their Bobby Wagner. So if we look at Wagner as a central, critical, impact-type player for Seattle, theoretically, Roquan Smith would fill that role in San Francisco.
Doesn't sound like there's a lot of mystery to Roquan Smith.
There's not.
Yeah, so if you draft him, you know exactly what he's bringing you. He's fast, explosive, sideline to sideline.
Yeah, there's not a lot of mystery to his game, and I think he'll be able to do that in the NFL. He's a speed, quickness, range linebacker. His game's predicated on athleticism, on movement. He sees things well, and that'll be critical for him. He's a little smaller, but I think we've learned over the years that that's not as big a deal. Wagner's about 230. Deion Jones, he weighs about 225, if that. So in today's NFL, a stacked linebacker can play at that weight, particularly if he's got the speed, range, and athleticism that's required.
So not much left to the imagination with Roquan Smith. On the other hand, Tremaine Edmonds, I'm sure teams will look at him differently. He's currently 19 years old, which is intriguing in itself. But he could also develop into a different type of linebacker in the NFL, depending on where he's drafted. Is he a stacked linebacker? Is he potentially a 3-4 outside linebacker?
Well,
there's many options.
That's a projection. Edmonds right now, people would be drafting him, in my opinion, based on his athleticism and his age. He's clearly a great athlete, and they believe that as he gets older with coaching and experience, he'll become a great player. At this point, he's clearly a better athlete than he is a player. He's a work in progress. For instance, I'll give you a perfect example. And you know this player really well. I don't believe as a player on tape that he's as good a prospect as Zach Cunningham was coming out of Vanderbilt. And Cunningham was a second-round pick who ended up playing very well for Houston over the last half of the season in a starting role, and he played in a number of their sub-packages as well. So, you know, Edmonds, I'm not going to say he's not going to be a good or even a great player, but I don't think he's that on tape right now, but he does have an excellent combination of size and athleticism. Now, if you want to line him up outside as a pass rusher, you have to ask yourself a question. Why didn't they do that at Virginia Tech?
And you have to, and you're basing it off of athleticism if you're projecting him to do that next level.
Correct.
As he develops.
Correct. So, I mean, can he do it? Maybe down the road he can. But he was not utilized that way at Virginia Tech.
Greg Cosell with us. Let's go to the secondary at the top of this draft. Denzel Ward at 5'10". How does he play given his size at outside corner?
Yeah, and that would be the only concern for people, because other than his size, he really fits the profile of a man-to-man cover corner. I mean, he's got sudden movement. He's got easy change of direction. He's played a ton of press man, because that's what Ohio State does. You know, he kind of reminds me of a more explosive, more sudden Chris Harris of Denver. Because Harris plays outside in Denver's base defense and then moves into the slot when they go to their sub package. And it wouldn't surprise me if teams see Denzel Ward that way. So, of course, the only concern really is that he's under 5'11 and he weighs less than 185 pounds. So when you think about the proliferation of bigger wide receivers in the NFL, that's what you have to think about. Can he match up playing his style, which is predominantly what we call mirror match press man? He's not a physical press man corner. He doesn't jam people. He mirrors their route. So it's mirror match press man. That's what he plays, and he's really, really good at it.
What's a strange note I have on him, he has gained 60 pounds over the last 5 years. Imagine how small he was.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's nuts.
Because, I mean, because he's only 180.
I know.
At the combine, he was 183. So what? That's 123 pounds?
Tiny, tiny high school player.
I can't remember when I weighed 123 pounds.
It was fifth grade for me. I can tell you exact time.
Probably for me as well.
Greg, is Minkah Fitzpatrick out an outside corner?
You know, that's going to be a great question. I would probably say I would see him as a safety in a base defense and a slot corner in sub. That's the way I would see him. Now, that doesn't mean he won't be seen as an outside corner, because he has the skill set to do that. But this past year, now he did it in previous years at Alabama, but this past year he only played a handful of snaps as an outside corner, which again doesn't mean he can't do it, because we've seen him do it on tape. But he didn't do it this year, and I'm sure that's because of the players they had outside and the way they used him to fit their schemes best. So I see him as a safety in base and as a slot corner in your sub.
So he's a nickel guy that will, he's going to move over to nickel for those sub packages.
In my view, yes. Okay. In my view.
Why is he best fit inside?
Well, he's a terrific blitzer, and I think you want to take advantage of that. He's actually, they played him basically as a linebacker in dime. Alabama played base, nickel, and dime. So in their nickel with five defensive backs, he played over the slot. In their dime, he played that kind of hybrid linebacker, you know, the role that Damian Stafford played for Tennessee 2 years ago. That's what Fitzpatrick did for Alabama when they played dime. So he's a terrific blitzer, both from the outside off the edge and even from inside.
Greg Cosell with us here on the Midday 180. Derwin James, the other safety at the top of this draft, Greg. Big nickel defender at times, I guess, but just an overall athlete is how I would describe him. How about you?
Yeah, and I don't think he's going to play slot corner, though. You know, that's the thing. So I think he's a different player than Minkah Fitzpatrick. James is a big, explosive athlete. You could easily make the argument that he's a more explosive athlete than Jamal Adams coming out of LSU a year ago, and Adams was the sixth overall pick and certainly had an excellent rookie season. I think in your base defense, he's a safety. I think he's a multi-dimensional safety. I think he can be the Harrison Smith, Eric Berry type player who can play both on the back end and in the box. He can cover tight ends. He can blitz. I think he has all the traits you're looking for to be that kind of multi-dimensional safety. And I think when all said and done, I would probably say I see similarities to Eric Berry.
Do you prefer him over Fitzpatrick for just pure safety roles?
If you're just talking about being a safety in a base defense?
Yes.
They're different kinds of players. See, that's why it's so hard for me to do lists, because Fitzpatrick is kind of a smooth athlete. Not that James is not he's a great athlete. James, he kind of reminds me at times, and I've talked with people about this, and I wasn't the one who said it, but I thought about it. He kind of looks the way he moves like Sean Taylor did, and Sean Taylor was on his way to probably being a great, great safety before he unfortunately died. But he kind of looks like that at times, and I think that player is a safety.
I wonder about James, because with all the quarterback talk for tomorrow, and depending on all the trades that we may hear about, if teams want to chase Tremaine Edmonds, for instance, I wonder if James could fall a bit. And I know you're not projecting that, but imagine.
Well, it all depends on the quarterbacks. You know, I think, you know, if four quarterbacks go in the top six or seven, which, you know, I guess that could happen, then players will drop. And then what happens is, because teams, they say they draft the best player. We know that's garbage. Ultimately, teams draft for need, and then they draft the best player who fits the need. So a player certainly like James could drop depending on which team is there.
You know, we've been doing scenarios like, okay, the Titans go here if this player drops to them at 25.
Right.
I'm looking at James and thinking, man, he makes a lot of sense for San Diego or L.A. with the Chargers secondary. If he were to fall all the way to, well, I think they pick 17, that would be quite the drop based on where we've been projecting him,
right,
and talking about him. But, man, that would be a perfect fit.
No, and that could easily happen. I mean, and that's the reason, guys, and I know people love it, and I don't really look at them. I guess that's just me, but that's why people like mock drafts. I don't think I've looked at one mock draft, because that's not something that gets me excited, but I know it gets a lot of people excited.
Greg Cosell is with us. Vita Vea,
yep,
defensive tackle out of Washington. You mentioned you put him in the description of Quentin Nelson earlier. What are his strengths and weaknesses? What stands out to you when you evaluated him?
Well, you know, he was a running back in high school. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Isn't that pretty remarkable?
Wow, yeah.
I mean, he's a country strong guy. I mean, he's just one of those guys. He's got better athletic movement than his side might suggest. He's not going to play in your sub packages. And again, I'm not saying that doesn't mean he has great value, because there's a lot of D linemen who don't necessarily play in sub packages. I don't know if he's a penetrating one gap defender. You know, the recent first round draft history of D tackles who were not penetrating one gap players and pass rushers is not that strong. You had Danny Shelton coming out of the same school in 2015 with the 12th pick, and you had Star Latulele going to Carolina with the 14th pick in 2013. Those were sort of big interior D tackles who were not going to play in your sub packages. So while Vea is a good prospect, I wonder ultimately how he will be seen value-wise.
Greg, whenever we started discussing this year's draft with you, at the end of your first visit with us, you mentioned how you had been watching Marcus Davenport from San Antonio.
Yep.
And you wanted to discuss him in the second week of all of this. As you've continued to dig up film on him and project him to the next level, ultimately, what have you come up with?
I mean, I like the player a lot. I think that people see him as a 4-3 D end, but that will be a bit of a transition, because I watched five or six full games, Jonathan, and I think only one snap did he actually have his hand on the ground in a three-point stance. He always played in a two-point stance. Now, could he be an outside backer? He probably could be. I think that there's elements of Jadeveon Clowney in his game because he's got really strong hands and he's a power player more than a bend, flexible kind of player. I think it's somewhat similar to Brian Arakpo, who we know very well in Tennessee. You know, Brian is not a true bend the edge, flexible player. He's more of a power pass rusher, you know, who's would be viewed just as Davenport would be viewed as a little stiff. But I think that the natural strength and power in his game is there. And he'll probably be a 4-3 D end, but I think it'll take a little work.
Greg, the receivers, another position we're all interested to see how they go tomorrow because of the group and the pairing and the discussion all offseason. Calvin Ridley, DJ Moore, Anthony Miller, Cortland Sutton. How do you differentiate between that group? Who do you like? Who's ready to just be dropped in and perform?
Well, Ridley is about as smooth and refined as they come for a college receiver. So the biggest question with Calvin Ridley is how he'll be seen because he weighs 190 pounds and he's thin-framed. So the question is, what is he in people's minds? Bill Polian, who I know well and is a pretty darn smart guy, sees Marvin Harrison in Calvin Ridley. Now, obviously, Marvin Harrison's a Hall of Famer. But Ridley is really smooth. His game is built on finesse, quickness, speed. He's not physical, and he's not about strength. He's lined up all over the formation, so he has that going for him as well. But as I said, he's 190 pounds. Who were some of the other receivers you mentioned there, Jonathan?
DJ Moore.
I really like him. You know, again, he was a guy. It's always funny how this works. You know, I knew nothing about DJ Moore when I started watching him on tape because, you know, obviously Maryland was not a big-time college football team. But I think Moore has a really desired combination of size. He's deceptively explosive. You know, he's not explosive, you know, in the sense of Ridley or like the Will Fuller types, the guys who are just burners. But he's got really good hands. He lined up all over the formation in Maryland. I think the big question with him, and it's actually a question that an issue that plagued Corey Davis this year as a rookie, the big question will be that transitional quickness and that separation burst. How quickly can he acclimate to the NFL in that regard? You know, I think it took Corey Davis a little bit of time, but he also missed basically the entire offseason program. Hopefully that doesn't happen with DJ Moore.
And with him, I'm curious. I think DJ Moore played with like three or four different quarterbacks.
Yeah, they didn't have a great quarterback situation.
Can you learn something though about a receiver that performs well despite that problem?
Well, I look at the player. I mean, I think I've always been taught and I believe that you can evaluate a player as an absolute. You know, numbers are numbers. I never look at the numbers. You know, I'm not evaluating a receiver based on whether he has 50 catches or 75 catches. I think you can see what his traits are, and I think that's what's critical. You know, it's like Jari Alexander, the corner from Louisville. People say, well, you can't look at his 2017 tape. Well, yeah, you can. He's pretty good on the 2017 tape, but he was hurt a lot and missed a bunch of games. But you can watch. I watched five games from 2017 and saw all the traits. So you're looking at the individual player, and you're studying his traits, attributes, and characteristics.
As far as just receivers who can straight run, is
that's Chark.
Okay.
That's DJ Chark.
What about Anthony Miller?
I would say that he's explosive, but not in that way. And I'd really like Anthony Miller. In fact, if you watch the matchup show, you'll see that I did a comparison between Anthony Miller's pro day numbers and Antonio Brown's pro day numbers when he came out of Central Michigan. And by the way, Antonio Brown was a sixth round pick, and Miller's are far better than Antonio Brown's. So take that for what it's worth, but I like Anthony Miller as a receiver quite a bit. And, but he's not explosive like DJ Chark.
And where would Cortland Sutton fit in?
I'm not as high on Cortland Sutton as others. I think he's a little bit ungainly in his movement. I think he's a big guy, and you have to take that into account. But I don't think he's really a comfortable player. Ultimately, he'll be a size, strength, ball skills receiver. I'm not sure. You know, those guys do well. Look, I think Alshon Jeffrey's done well. I wonder if, when all said and done, if Sutton profiles more like a Marquise Colston did for the Saints, you know, as kind of an inside receiver working the middle of the field against linebackers and safeties.
Paul not here. He's covering the mini camp today for the Titans, but he sends a text to me and says, ask Greg about Chad Thomas, Miami defensive end or outside linebacker.
Yeah, I think he's a traits player. I think his traits are better than the way he plays, which doesn't mean that he can't become a great player. But he's long, he's athletic, he looks the part. His good plays look like wow plays, and you say, oh, that guy's going to be really good. But there's not much consistency to his game. So usually guys like that get drafted third, fourth round. He could be drafted earlier if, you know, someone falls in love with the traits because they are there on tape. But yeah, he does have a lot of the attributes you look for, and he's got length, and that length always matters.
Greg, we've made it to the finish line of all of the analysis leading up to the draft. Next week, we'll start to place these players on rosters and see how they fit.
You having a big draft party, Jonathan?
We're live on the air tomorrow on Titans Radio, every pick.
Oh, my goodness.
How about that?
Wow.
We may call you.
Well, that's all right. Believe it or not, tomorrow night I'll be actually home watching the draft. So
in the recliner.
I'll be in the recliner, okay. Home watching the draft. You know, I'm trying to decide if I want to do live tweeting, you know, because I just don't want to say, you know, hey, that's a good pick, because that doesn't mean anything.
By the way, go follow Greg on Twitter, at Greg Cosell. You can see the write-ups that he's been doing.
And Greg, if you get a call from a 615 area code, just pick up tomorrow night. They may need you on air.
Well, if it's Kaharsky, you know, I won't. But if it's you guys,
thank
I will.
You. Absolutely.
We've talked to you well. Thank you, Greg.
All right, guys, thanks.
All right, Greg Cosell Weekly, the very best when it comes to draft analysis, and he's nice enough to do a few extra minutes with us today.